HKX Mobile. Good drive so far on the way home.
Good. I'm past all the worst stuff. You know, up in the construction zone now on the home stretch to exit 96. Well, how are you doing?
Finished up a little early today, but now I got to drive all the way up to the Asheville Airport at FedEx and pick up a cart and then drive back down and then drive back home.
Well, at least you're the maybe pick up your dinner to go at Sierra Nevada.
Probably won't eat no dinner this evening. Sometimes, but it is what it is, so. But I'm enjoying a beautiful day. It's been nice out here today.
Yeah, drive, that's for sure. I'd much rather be out here than in the office.
Nice when you got back this morning.
I moved to a different office as soon as I got in this morning, and then, of course, catching up on a week of being out is a little nuts, too, but I think it's under control.
When you come back from vacation, they move you to another office. What'd you do to deserve that?
I have been sharing an office with another manager. It was a conference room that they converted into a double office. But they're restructuring all the seating plans and stuff, and so I'm getting an I got an office of my own now, so I got to do, you know, my own private space.
Well, at least it was an upgrade.
It is, and, man, it's just they you know, changed the number of people in the building, so there's more available offices now, and I'm right next door to my boss now. So it's a little bit more convenient and closer. You know, they're moving my whole team over into the office tower, so we're all going to be a lot closer together.
You can get a lot more done face-to-face than you can over the telephone or Zoom meeting. It just loses a lot in the meeting. Just don't. Not saying I don't get anything out of it, just don't seem to get as much out of it.
A lot more done if I'm just by myself with nobody bothering me.
That too, I agree with that one. It's just when I have to deal with somebody, I'd rather do it face to face.
There's time for both, but my bias is towards you know, having more alone time and less face to face time. You know, face to face time is great under some circumstances, but it's not a magic bullet.
Great. And everybody's different. I mean, that's why we have a different personality. So, I mean, everybody's different. They learn different. They deal with situations different. So, what works for one doesn't always work for the other.
True.
Zoom class for the extra. I'm really struggling with trying to wrap my mind around some of it from the Zoom meeting versus where you're face to face and you can kind of have that personal connection. It seems like they're just going through it so fast that I'm struggling to keep up.
What's going for you overall?
It's going good. Nothing like that. It's just I'm having trouble keeping up with certain things. I'm having to do extra study on my own, which I don't mind, but I like having somebody that you can ask questions at times too.
Real office hours back in college where you could sit down face to face with a TA or your professor or something.
And then, I don't know, in the class it seems like there's some of these guys that they don't need to be there. They don't even give you a chance to read the question and they're already spouting out the answer.
Disruptive when you got people trying to show off what they know and it doesn't give you an opportunity to think about the question.
The biggest thing for me is that one right there. Is that I don't even get a chance to read the question, and then somebody's already spouted out the answer, and they're already talking about it, and then I'm like, well, I didn't even get a chance to process what we're doing.
Divide the class into two sections, the people who already know everything and the people who actually need to learn it.
Perfect answer is, I don't think there is one. It's just, that's what I'm personally struggling with.
KT, well, if there's anything I can do to help, let me know. I mean, face-to-face meetings are hard for me, but with my busy schedule and everything, but, you know, if you ever need, you know, additional, you know, talk about stuff, let me know.
Yeah, And I appreciate that. May have to take you up on it sometime, but for right now, I think I'm managing to get through it, but if I run across something, I'll definitely give you a shout.
Up here at 92, and I'm starting to lose the repeater, as usual, same place every time, so I'm going to let you run in 673. Hope you have a good night, but I'll be back in the morning. Anyway, talk to you then, W2JKT.
I'll catch you in the morning, K04HK, mobile and monitoring.
I finally got out, W4DJW. Hey, Patrick.
Dave.
You are?
The wind, yes.
Washington, all of the flags are leaning over.
Exxon buildings and stuff like that, they're at a full attention, that's for sure. But then there's gusts that just hit your side of the truck and let you know, hey, you're here.
Like having a big parachute attached to your vehicle, that big broad side of the truck.
Depends on where it hits you.
And it's still holding up, the repair that they did?
We're good. I haven't had any more trouble out of it.
Well, and if they would have been missing the tool for the job, it's highly likely you would have had it for them, huh?
But you never know. We run across that one thing, and it seems like there's always that one thing that somebody needs you don't have.
Getting close to the end of my mechanicking days, I had accumulated some special tools that were meant for special bolts on special vehicles, and that's all that tool was ever needed for. But when you needed it, you had to have it.
There's a lot of that nowadays, where cars are becoming highly specialized to work on them. And it takes a lot of special tools. Just a regular set of wrenches and sockets don't cut it anymore.
Working on them, there wasn't any of those. They designed the cars so that with the standard tools, you could get to every bolt on it you needed to get. I mean, you know, within reason. You couldn't get to, like, the main caps under the oil pan where the crossover was. You know, you had to pull the engine for those. But for most everything else, the engineers planned ahead for working on the car. But as time went by, there was less and less. There was more optimizing it for, you know, cramming everything in there than there was optimizing it for working on it.
You'd be surprised at how many different fastener type drives there are now. You know, just we're all used to the standard Torx 6-point star. Now you got Torx Plus, you got 8-point, you got 5-point, you got 12-point, then you got 12-point plus. It's just getting out of hand.
Yeah, why they need that many of them? Well, I guess I don't know. maybe it's motivated by somebody making some more income. Maybe it's motivated. I know one of the, like when they went from the flat blade to the Phillips head, that was a really big production changer when Phillips heads came out. That saved them tons of money on the production line for automotive, making automobiles. But after that, you know, maybe the Allen head did a little bit more, but then the Torx head, and then all of these others that are coming out, I don't know. I think it's more for making sure that you don't open something that you're not supposed to open if you don't have the right tools to open it.
If you look at, let's take a trailer, for instance, an enclosed trailer. You look at the siding on that, and it'll be put on with, most of the time, it's a 5-point Torx. They call it a safety starter, and it's not very common. That's the only place I know they use it, but you got to have it sometimes to get into that stuff, and otherwise you're not getting there because they don't want everybody to have it.
It would be readily available that somebody would want to, you know, tear up, because as a matter of convenience, they just make it inconvenient. Yeah. That does make sense in those use cases. W4DJW.
NGU.
KO4HKX here.
Hey, what's Phil? Hey, y'all. How you doing? W4NGU.
Leisurely drive up the mountain.
Move
moved out west now, but when he lived here in town, he worked on the helicopter for Greenville Hospital System. And he was always talking about the tools he had to fabricate, and I'm going, what sense does it make to engineer a product that there is no tool for? He had to make his own to do it. It blew my mind.
Was the tool, he probably just didn't buy it or didn't know.
Surprised at how often that happens. I've got a drawer full of them where I have custom bent wrenches and different tools for different jobs, and that's all they're there for is when I run across that job again.
He had the helicopter's developed engine trouble in Asheville and sat down at a construction site, and he ordered a Rolls-Royce engine from overseas, got it in, put it in his pickup truck, drove up there, paid a crane on the construction site to lift it off his truck and switch the motors, did all that himself, and flew the rascal home. Now, that takes some know-how.
His confidence, especially with a helicopter, because those things are like egg beaters.
It's made him go around the field, you know, one circle. If he did almost anything of consequence, to make sure it was going to fly.
Vietnam?
No. He was military trained, though. He said there's no way anymore to go to school, but it costs so much to get that training if you don't go through the military. But I'll tell you one other thing. He was so meticulous. Those rotor blades can only flex a certain number of degrees when you're taking them out of the packaging, replacing them. And they were replacing them, and he saw it flex just a little bit too much. And everybody else said, nobody will know. You don't worry about it. Put it on. And he would not sign off on it. And the company got mad at him because, I mean, those things are deathly expensive. But they threw them in the garbage. Well, took them to the dump and bought new blades because he wouldn't sign off. I mean, he was a stickler.
Probably hit on the line if he does sign off on it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have done it either.
My mind about that door that blew off the Boeing aircraft. I worked on radar at the airport for a short period, and we had to sign everything we did. I mean, you don't do nothing without signing off. They know who did that, but now they say the paperwork has disappeared.
Comes in it, just like the guy that turned up dead because he had was going to wrap Boeing out on some stuff there that they were doing.
That a lot of people taking a lot of shortcuts, and when you have a large turnover, you know that you can have a lot of mistakes like that. W4DJW.
Well, they've sure got their share of them coming in now, about one a month, don't they?
It does seem that way. They've got plenty of problems on the horizon right now.
Impacting United more than the other ones. Poor United.
Anything about the unions that are doing that stuff either, if you notice. You know, somebody's got to turn those bolts.
None of the union workers are going to stand up and say, hey, I did it. My fault.
Worked for a union. I know they tried to get in at Michelin while I was there, and they were never successful. And I was kind of glad of it. That was just somebody else to put money in their pocket. But I guess there are instances where they're needed.
On the union, but when I worked at DuPont, they tried to get one in there too, and it never came in.
Turned on the radio, Patrick. I heard you saying something about a repair to your truck. What happened?
A major rear suspension and axle housing issues. So cost me a couple days of work and quite a bit of funds.
Out of warranty, wasn't it?
Under warranty, wasn't even really close, but still, the truck's only got 140,000 miles on it, and this is the second time that it's had rear suspension problems.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad you got it going again.
Yeah, and Phil, it could have something to do with these wonderfully smooth roads we ride on.
Well, I just wanted to say, guys, almost anything we'd done on an aircraft when I was in the service had to be safety wired, so the nuts wouldn't come loose or the bolts wouldn't come loose. I just don't see how they managed to be that stupid, other than they're outsourcing a lot of their work and not overseeing it right. Just wanted to comment there. Go ahead, Dave.
Were even in there, Tom. I think they left them out altogether. Even if they were to be wired in there, somebody forgot to put the bolts in, or some process wasn't followed the way that it should have been followed, and the check sheet wasn't checked the way it should have been. From what I understand, they never even put the bolts in it. W4DJW.
They'll get to the bottom of it, I reckon. Yeah, David could tell some neat while he was working at the airport. A big buzzard flew into the front windshield and just shattered the windshield, hit the pilot in the shoulder, covered him with blood, went back and landed on the patient. And of course, with the microbiology and everything now, you just don't get some cleaner and clean that up. The entire interior had to be completely replaced.
And you can just wipe off and carry on.
As Matt has to come in. I know what you mean. Any kind of blood spill or that in the factories nowadays, you get the people up in the front office. What am I trying to say? What's the name of that, Bernice? Huh? No, it's not OSHA, but anyways, the people that handle the personnel department up there now, it's amazing. We had some really bad accidents where I worked at, and they cordoned off the area and had to be a special team come in and clean it up. But yeah, those bird strikes are awful, Phil. No question about it. We used to have trouble with jackrabbits out at Moffett Field there in California at a certain time of year. And from what my brother said, they let them come in there once a year and go out there and shoot the jackrabbits and harvest them. Because once those engines started to turn up, those jackrabbits had huge ears, and they just go nuts because a jet engine's one of the noisiest things in the world, of course. Well, I'll let you guys go. Bernice has a pre-supper thing here, and we're going to have some fried catfish for dinner. But nice hearing you all today. This is NGRL-TR. Go ahead, Dick.
Of a bird strike on a helicopter. And I don't know what that helicopter cabin was made out of, but that it flexed. It looked like it flexed a foot and a half when that bird hit it. And then the bird slid off to the side of it, and it popped back out. I was amazed at that. I guess they've got some new materials now that will, instead of breaking and shattering, they'll just flex, and when it finishes flexion, it pushes the bird right back off of the cabin.
He designed something with an air conditioner and a heater and stuff to stay out on the runway. I never had thought about it, but you know how hot it gets out, you know, in the summer, in the sun, with that thing sitting out there, and you can't put scalding hot blood in somebody. And they have like 90 seconds or something, or to get in the helicopter when they get a call, and like 2 minutes total to get in the air or something like that. But you can't be taking that stuff out and loading up every time. It's got to stay out there. So he kept the interior totally conditioned the whole time, 365 a year.
To do something like that. But guys, I am making the climb up the mountain, so I'm going to lose the repeater shortly. Good to talk to you, Dave, the 4HKX, and I'll be clear, 7-3.
And Phil, that's kind of like the fighter pilots that sit in the red room, the ones that are on call. They're sitting in a room that's only got red light. And when it's time to go, their eyes don't have to adjust at all. They're already adjusted.
Have impressed. The guy had a Garmin GPS mounted right there that he would enter where he was going.
Was in there or not. But anyway, Tom, if you're still listening, catch you later. Nice talking to you. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty neat. The first time I learned about pilots, you know, half a dozen pilots sitting in a room for hours. And if they didn't get called, then they'd leave and another set of, would come in. And they would overlap long enough for their eyes to adjust. So that if they had to scramble, there wasn't any scrambling with your eyes having to do an adjustment.
Yeah, Dave, the ready room on the carrier, we always had, it was all red lights. Anything on the flight deck at night was red lights, and all the passageways were red going up to get in the aircraft. And then the aircraft was all red, and N0TR's basement at night is all red. It's better on the cones and the rods in your eyes. They said if we caught a flash of white light, that it would run our night vision for 30 minutes, Dave, in 0TR.
I knew it was, you know, there was a reason for having your pilots be at optimal level, but I didn't know that it would white light would affect it for 30 minutes. Yeah, that would be bad.
Wrong, though.
It is. First time I landed on the carrier, the next evening, they told me to go. In our spare time, when I wasn't flying, I'd go to the electric shop. And I went up to check something out in the plane, I don't know, the radar or something. And when I walked up there, I had a flashlight, and I forgot to change it to a red light. And they come over that loudspeaker system on that thing and told me to report up there immediately, and I shut that light off, and I scrambled back to the electric shop. I thought out of 3,500 guys, and you couldn't see your hand in front of your face, they wouldn't go find out who that was.
Like they use different colored lights like that when we're out hunting for a hung-up transmitter or something like that. They like to use red lights, and now they've switched. I think now they use mostly green. I don't know what the deal is there. I don't know what the difference between red and green is, but I know they like to use green now.
Green is more compatible with the human eye, and with the green laser during the day, you can see it on a pistol or a rifle, and you cannot see it with a red light, Dave.
Now, they do that when they're using smoke with looking at the vortex that comes off the wingtip. When they're flying through smoke, they use green light, too. That must be the same reason.
Yes, and we had three lights out in the wing, and they were called angle of attack. And you know what that is. And as we was coming in, you picked up the eight ball on the left side of the carrier, and the flight control officers down there would see those angle of attack lights and direct the pilot to get his attitude right as he come aboard the carrier. Go ahead, Phil.
Tom, I noticed some planes recently, at least from the ground, the lights are white on the right and the left. What's that about?
Strobes on them, and I'm no expert why it would be, but and I don't know that he is on that, because that's not what he does, but we was always taught red right was returning, green going gone. It was going away from you, Phil.
Saying I knew there was a jingle to it, but to help you know if they were coming to you or leaving you. But I've seen some two whites, at least from the ground. Maybe they're on top of the wing. It's different from another plane's view.
You know, they're accordingly, but they do have the strobes, which are, in my opinion, much more visible. Go ahead, Nick.
I'm having to adjust to my... I still have to use my GPS to get down here to Simpsonville to get the right exit. And I look down at the map, and it's like, man, my eyes are bright sunshine. And then the contrast with the map on the dash, hard to see. Hard to see that exit 27.
Yeah, I run my GPS every time I get in the car just for traffic reports.
We got that on ours now. But, like, we went to Simpsonville, Spartanburg today. Went to Ray's Sewing Center, pick up Ray's sewing machine. Boy, they did a bang-up nice job on that overpass going into Spartanburg now. But I just despise those roundabouts. I guess I'm in a minority, but I don't like them, especially that one, because the exits are just jammed together. And when we took it down there about a week ago, as we was leaving Spartanburg, there was a wreck, and you couldn't even... I noticed it for about a block or two away, and I was able to get out in the safety lane and make a U-turn, and I knew my way back around the other way, and it was blocked up entirely, and the traffic was backing up.
Years ago that Heron Circle in Spartanburg had more wrecks than any place in the upstate. Now they're putting roundabouts everywhere, but I guess as the public gets used to them, maybe there'll be less. And it sure will save, just think about, you know, the next 50 years not having a four lights hanging there burning.
About the busiest intersection. Do you remember back in the 70s which intersection was the busiest intersection in Greenville?
291 and East North.
Exactly. I was wondering if you would remember that. Do you remember the days when 290, that place is a ghost town over there now. That used to be the busiest intersection in upstate.
Ghost town?
It's nothing like it used to be.
In the ballpark there, but... Yeah, I know they'd save a lot of fuel, Phil. But, like, I have to go down to Dr. Hartley's about every 3 years for my colonoscopy, and he's down there... You go down there at that corner where you just turn left and Costco's is right there, that big intersection, but Verde, and you go straight on. I don't know how many roundabouts there, and boy, if you're not right on the ball, you'll miss those doctor's offices altogether.
There's YouTube videos of people that don't know a roundabout's coming up and they just launch into the air. Have you seen those?
Okay.
And across the circular part, hit the inside, the hole of the donut, and it was raised up at an angle. And that launched the car all the way across the road on the other side. And I think it landed in a tree or in a building or something. It was one of those little cars, so it wasn't a very heavy car, and it was going pretty fast. Yeah, like Phil said, it went airborne.
I'm talking about there, you named it a while ago there at Spartanburg, and the roundabout would be okay, but the exits are just one right on top of the other.
Go ahead and turn on the lights in front of my parents' house that they put in. They've been having hanging there with a black trash bag over them for 2 months now. Everybody knows they're there now.
Experimental plane went down in Gila Bend, Arizona, Dave. I don't know if anybody was killed in it or not. And that's the feast frying over there behind me, if you hear that. If I pronounced it right.
When did that happen?
Must have been real recent, because I'm just sitting here without the sound on the TV, and it flashed up on the TV. And our kids are in Costa Rica right now, and you mentioned liking the Caribbean. Well, I looked at the temperature there in Liberia where they land, and all week this week it was 97 degrees and about, I think, 86% humidity. And you reminded me very much of landing on Wake Island the first time. I just went right back up in the airplane, Dave.
Caribbean. And all you do is, well, at least where we stayed out there, you just walk out into the water and you turn around and walk back. You walk out to over your head, and then you turn around and walk right back, and you're cool as a cucumber.
Why it was beautiful like that. Go ahead, Phil.
I'll tell stories about aircraft, don't you, Dave?
It has anything to do with aircraft. I came really close to going into the military aircraft, but I didn't. Didn't go. Last minute. Changed my mind.
Doesn't seem like you and Steve fly as much as you used to, or maybe just not on the radio as much.
We have health issues. But once we get past those, we'll be back to flying again.
helicopters. The reason they're so expensive is what I was told, and I've flown in them very seldom, but I sit on one on the carrier one day talking to another guy named Tom, and I asked him why he wasn't in the flight crew. It was a lot better deal, I thought, because the whole carrier's there to support the flight crew, you know, and he says, push it on the side of that, Tom, and I did, and wow, you could bend the metal on the side of that. I think it was a CH-54 Sikorsky, and he says, those 27-millimeter shells, that don't have much resistance in them. He says, that's why I'm staying on the carrier. But now with them Houthi rebels shooting at all the carriers over there, they're getting shot at every day just about. So I don't know. That's an 1,100-foot target. But the thing that makes them so dang expensive, I think Tom told me they replace everything by hours on the helicopter. They don't just check it like they do a monthly or a weekly or a yearly in major overhauls. And they just put on new parts on helicopters after so many hours, Dave.
You are correct, and I remember seeing a static display over 20 years ago of a Black Hawk, and 20 years ago, the guy said it took $4,000 an hour when you count maintenance and fuel and everything and parts and all that stuff. There's no telling what it is now.
The reasons I think that they do that is, it's like when I used to live in France, they'd ask me when we went to lunch, why do you put salt on your french fries every single time? Why don't you taste them first? And I said, because after I've tasted them first about five or six times, I know what it's going to be. Well, those parts, after they fixed them, you know, four or five times, and they have micro fractures in them, they know what it's going to be. So why even waste the time? It's that makes a lot of sense. That vibration is so high that it fatigues parts. When I used to fly RC helicopters, it was amazing, Tom. When you're flying an airplane, you get this feeling, you know, when your head is staying with the airplane and you're cutting through the air, you have the feeling of flight, even though your feet are, you know, on the ground. Your head is still flying. You could fly a RC helicopter out in front of you and it wasn't moving at all and get the exact same sensation. It's just kind of amazing. I really like flying RC helicopters, even if you're not doing anything but just hovering right out in front of you. W4DJW.
Gotta go, guys. Bernice set off the smoke detectors. And it's time to eat dinner. Great talking to you both. Yeah, have a fine day. This is NZTR Clear.
Phil, I'm almost destined.
Sign off with you. I signed up for one of those retirement seminar things, and they're going to feed me a meal at Saskatoon, and I'm sure they're going to try to sell me something, but I'm going to smack my lips while they're talking to me.
Well, enjoy the free meal. I get those, too. I just don't take them up on them. Not yet. I might one day if I get bored. Anyway, have a good one. W4NGU, W4DJW.
See you, man. W4 never give up, clear.